Good morning, all. Today is the 556th day of war, and here is the latest news in England, Germany, and the United States, reported direct from the capitals of these nations. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Ed Doyce speaking. There were no air raids on any part of the British Isles last night, presumably due to the weather. Several German aircraft attempted to approach the coast, where, says the Air Ministry, there was very slight activity. Three German bombers were shot down by RAF fighters off the East Coast this morning. The monthly air raid casualty list was issued today. 789 civilians were killed and 1,068 seriously injured in February. The total, though far lower than the monthly average since September, is high in proportion to the number of heavy raids during the month. Colonel Donovan paid his long-expected visit to Southern Ireland today. He flew from London to Dublin and is lunching with Mr. De Valera. He was met at the airport by ERA government officials and is expected to return to London tonight. The eyes of the 300 Norwegian patriots who left their homes in the Lofoten Islands to be free popped out this morning at their first sight of a city as big as London. But they didn't read themselves praised in the newspapers anymore. In fact, there is no mention of the Navy's raid in the noon editions. The editors were given a tip that there had been too much boasting about a routine naval operation. The News Chronicle this morning, however, drew a moral from the raid. It shows the need for audacity. Audacity, the paper writes, took the British fighting men into the fjords of Lofoten. If the War Department were prepared to exercise the same quality in that other and more important theater of war, there is no one in this country who will not back them to the limit. The lack of audacity, the paper continues, lost us Norway early in the war. Hesitation, unwillingness to decide, were mainly responsible for the long list of reverses that we suffered. In Greece, we have our last bridgehead on the European continent. In Greece, we have our chance to force a second front on the enemy, anxious to avoid that peril to his security. There are heavy risks, the Chronicle admits, but they ought to be run. All the papers and the radio play up reports from Washington that the lease and lend bill is expected to pass the Senate today. There is no comment. The greatest reserve is necessarily maintained. But the idea that shipping is the crux of the whole question is still the main topic of special articles in many of the papers. And some pretty stiff criticism is being leveled against the government. Sir W. Reardon Smith, in his presidential address to the British shipowners meeting yesterday, for example, blamed the lack of cooperation between civil servants and practical shipping men for the delays in loading and unloading ships at British ports. Shipping men of great ability and experience, he said, have been sidetracked by civil servants in the Ministry of Shipping. There are a number of little stories today which prove that human beings the world over are very much alike. The tie that binds is the cause for which people work or fight. And every country has what are called cranks. In a villa among the lakes of Northumberland, for example, a group of 30 men, some of military age and women, are at this moment calculating by astronomy the length of Christ's life. They are working out chronologically the creation of the world and all that has happened since. They devote all their energies to this cause. Two of the men appeared before a conscientious objectors tribunal at Lancaster. They said they considered the work they were doing as the, quote, highest contribution they could give to the people of Britain, unquote. Their appeal was allowed, and they were exempted from military service. Peculiar People is the headline over the story in the Daily Mail. A reader of the same paper writes to urge that all boys up to 21 ought to be compelled to wear knickers in order to save cotton and wool. Those unable to afford new outfits could cut off their long trousers. The editor asks, why confine the rule to boys under 21? Opponents and proponents of the Oxford Group movement in the House of Commons have drawn about level on the eve of a vote. 48 members have now appended their names to Mr. A.P. Herbert's motion to revoke the charter of Mr. Buckman's movement because it is harmful to the British cause in many countries. Six of Mr. Herbert's original supporters, including several Catholic MPs, have deserted to the opposition's counter-motion drafted by Sir Robert Gower. Sir Robert has mustered 49 supporters for his contention that the Oxford Group campaign strengthens the bonds of friendship between the Empire and the United States. I return you now to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
That was our staff reporter in London, giving you the news John Bull will find in his afternoon newspaper. And next we take you over the Atlantic Ocean, beyond the British Isles, the English Channel, and the occupied lowlands, to bring you the news in Germany. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin. Sensational news coming from Washington is spread all over the front pages of German newspapers this morning. President Roosevelt, it is asserted, is so anxious to keep Yugoslavia out of the three-power pact that he has offered the country a guarantee of her integrity if it refuses to join. The mask has fallen from the aid to England bill, says the Fergusher Beobachter. Roosevelt seeks to prevent the new order in Europe, headlines the Börsenzeitung. Roosevelt wanted to force a promise of assistance on Yugoslavia, the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung announces. The Monroe Doctrine is for Roosevelt a scrap of paper, is how the Bateset am Mittag puts it. Roosevelt's failure in the Balkans revealed in the Lokalanzeiger and the background of Roosevelt's excited message to Yugoslavia in the 12-hour blot complete the picture given in the press here of the president's alleged move and its subsequent failure. The authority for all these sensational disclosures is a dispatch attributed to the Washington correspondent of a Budapest evening paper, Magyar Szag, which I find on inquiry in Hungarian circles is the official organ of the National Socialist Party in Hungary. The gist of the story is that on February 14th, the day of the Yugoslav statesman visited the Führer at the Berghof, Mr. Sumner Wells called up the Yugoslav minister in Washington and asked him to come to his house in the middle of the night, where he told him that the president wished to put an end to all further successes of the Axis powers, diplomatic or otherwise, and that the aid to England bill would give America the means to hinder any attempts to introduce the new order in Europe. The further implications of the story in the Hungarian National Socialist paper are, to show up, the aid to England bill is not so much a defensive measure, but one that is aggressive in its nature, and, as the Fergusher Beobachter says, in lining it up with its own recent disclosures of Roosevelt's policy and the documentary evidence found in Poland and in France in government archives, it is to show that the president's entire policy has been aimed at intervention in the war. The Wilhelmstrasse is inclined to be reticent in its comment on the publicity given the incident in the German press, and when asked about the authenticity of the report, reference was made to the dispatch in the Hungarian National Socialist paper. It seems that this Saturday is going to pass by after all without seeing a further signature affixed to the three-power pact, although at the beginning of the week this seemed entirely possible. After the first rush which brought Hungary, Romania, and Slovakia into line on successive days, there has been a certain letup, and it seems that protracted negotiations are necessary now before new adherents are gained. It is learned here that the Japanese Foreign Minister Matsuoka is coming to Berlin, a report that has been rumored for some days and that now finds confirmation from sources that are at least semi-official. Definite announcement may be expected soon. The Russian agency TASS has again come out with a denial, this time of the rumor that Russia had asked Romania to cede her naval bases on the Black Sea. Nothing is known on the Wilhelmstrasse regarding a reply from Turkey to the recent personal message sent to the Turkish president by Adolf Hitler, but it is intimated that it is customary that such a document should receive an answer in due course. Sinkings of British ships are increasing again, the German communique reporting that a submarine had sunk 5 vessels for a total of 33,000 tons, and that German speedboats had sunk 6 armed merchantmen and 2 destroyers in an attack on the southeast coast of England. German planes once more attacked Malta and set fire to a torpedo dump. A British pursuit bomber was shot down and a Sunderland seaplane was set on fire. In England, German planes bombed airports in south and central England and registered a hit on an armament works near Newark and on another near Bristol. there were no British planes over Germany yesterday. One of the planes that distinguished itself at Newark, by the way, was commanded by a lieutenant with the same name as myself, but he is no relation that I know of. The new burgomasters that have been appointed in Amsterdam and Haarlem were sworn in by the German Reichscommissioner Seyss Inquart himself, who said that their appointment was not a reprisal for the recent unfortunate incidents in Holland, but were to prevent their repetition in the future. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
Now let's hear the news at home, reported by Earl Godwin from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. Listening to my colleague Theodor Knaut, I came to the conclusion there's no wonder he nearly choked to death over that story. That probably is as fantastic a tale as I have ever heard. This government is not interested and has not had a long arm reaching over into Yugoslavia trying to influence diplomacy. They do their influencing if home, if possible, and I think that story that he told, which is probably correct, reported by him as coming from propaganda sources, will be denied or laughed at in this town all day today. The leased land bill is over the hump and will be passed. Senator Bennett Clark of Missouri is sure the bill will not pass today, but he seems to be alone in his view. He bases his view that there will be delay on the fact that there are three remaining major amendments which can easily take a lot of time. One amendment, important amendment, which the administration opposed yesterday, owes its defeat late yesterday in large measure to the voice of a woman, Senator Hattie Carraway of Arkansas. The veteran Senator Norris of Nebraska, who supports the bill generally, by the way, was urging his own amendment, which prohibits or would prohibit the use of armed forces overseas. Norris said he wanted to assure American mothers that their boys will not go to war. Of course, he conceded that his amendment would not be legally binding, but that it was reassuring. It sounded good. The administration leaders, worried, one by one took the floor against it, because there's a tremendous emotional appeal in any argument against war, no matter how legal or illegal it is. Administration leaders urged that the Norris Amendment was meaningless, that it would mislead people who would think that this was a declaration that there could not ever be a war. They said it would really deceive mothers and so forth. Then up rose Mrs. Carraway, who rarely speaks, and in a calm voice, the woman senator from Nebraska made the moment dramatic as she said these words, "I speak for the mothers who are not afraid. I have had letters from them from all parts of the country. I myself have two sons who are in the army. I believe it would be much safer for them not to amend this bill or weaken it." It was Mrs. Carraway who really saved the day for the bill at that juncture, and I've been told that by administration leaders no later than 10 minutes ago. Believe it or not, Senator Norris almost had a victory there until Mrs. Carraway spoke. One remaining amendment for today, in which the country at large will probably take deep interest, is that of Senator Walsh of Massachusetts. His proposal is to forbid the president to give away or lend or rent or sell or dispose of in any manner any military or naval aircraft which cannot be replaced with better equipment in 3 months. I assume that Walsh speaks for the Navy, or he speaks the Navy view, I should say, because he's close to the Navy, chairman of the Naval Affairs Committee of the Senate, and a firm believer in keeping our Navy to ourselves and for ourselves. Then today, Senators Taft and Toby want to substitute their own bills for the leased lend bill. They want to lend money instead of the leased lend procedure. And the third hurdle is the opposition motion, which would shelve the whole program. The Walsh Amendment relating to aircraft, I think, has the best chance, but probably will not be adopted. And Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
Tomorrow, Sunday, this regular morning report is heard over most of these stations at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. This is the National Broadcasting Company.